Would you know how to get rid of your fear, phobia, stress, or anxiety? How to burst your fear and transform your life? Welcome to Fear Busters Show, presented by Lauren Rosenberg, fear and phobia relief expert and author of How to Move Forward When the Unthinkable Happens. You are listening to UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio with Lauren Rosenberg. www.fear-busters.com.
Hi, welcome back to Fear Buster. I'm Lauren Rosenberg, your host, and today we're going to talk about crystal healing, and we're going to talk to Sonali, who's going to share her personal story and how crystal healing, how she came across with crystal healing, and how crystal healing became a profession, and how she's helping people. So, hi, Sonali, welcome to the show. Hi.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. So would you like, Sonali, just explaining and sharing your journey and how, you know, later on we're going to talk about crystal, but what happened to you singing, how old were you? When you had the incident or?
In the tsunami or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
So I was 16 years old when I was in the tsunami in 2004.
At the time you were on holiday or?
Yes. So we were in the Maldives living it up. We'd just done 2 weeks in Sri Lanka. And it was a strange one because we had this amazing couple of weeks in Sri Lanka, then moved on to the Maldives. And I remember it was the night before the tsunami and we were supposed to go scuba diving. And I was like, I just have this funny feeling. I just don't want to go scuba diving tomorrow. And
who were you with? I was with
my parents, my mum and my dad. And my mum was the bravest, most fearless woman I've ever met in my entire life. Nothing stopped her from doing anything. She climbed mountains and she'd go zip lining later in life as well. And all of these things. She was just that woman that I looked up to. So, you know, we wanted to go scuba diving the next day. My dad can't swim, so he wasn't going to come with us. And I just decided that I didn't want to go scuba diving. And the next morning at 9:15 a.m., the tsunami hit. My parents were in the restaurant at the time, and I was in the room on my own. And it was just one of the worst experiences of my life.
Where, you know, what did you know what happened at the time? Were you just wondering what was going on?
Absolutely clueless. Absolutely clueless. I remember thinking, because we were on a beach villa, and I remember thinking, oh, I didn't realize this would happen on a beach villa, that the wave starts coming in through your door. And I remember going, what is going on here? Being on my own, 16 years old, very young, and not knowing what was going on. But this, basically the window, so the patio door / window was completely filled like an aquarium. And then it all just came crashing in and I was swept away to the front of the room. But what I realized was in the bathroom, going into the bathroom, there's an outdoor shower. So to get out of the room, I thought, you know, I couldn't get out the front door because it had jammed. I then went straight into the bathroom because I thought, oh, there's an outdoor shower. I can, you know, scale a 6-foot, 7-foot wall and just get out the bathroom somehow. I don't know. It was all thought process. And so when I went into the bathroom, the door slammed shut behind me and I got stuck in there and the water kept rising. Without realizing it, without knowing it, we saw later through like going back in, taking pictures, I had managed to lift filled suitcases saturated with water on top of the sink so that they wouldn't get wet and I could find stuff. I'd managed to put a chair on top of the toilet. I don't remember doing any of this. And so that came as a shock to me that there was this adrenaline rush. Didn't know what I was doing, but I managed to
surviving. Yeah, just a surviving instant. But it's interesting that you don't even remember. Yeah.
I don't remember it. And the funny thing is, I also didn't realize until afterwards, so about 10 minutes later, that my feet were covered in glass and I was bleeding heavily from my feet, but I didn't feel anything because you've got that, as you said, survival.
You need to get out of it. Yeah.
And I remember looking, because my dad's diabetic, I remember looking for his insulin, like going under the water trying to find his insulin. So glass in my hands, glass in my feet, not even realizing any of the pain.
Are you a good swimmer, or okay with water?
Thankfully, I could swim. My mum always taught me, how to swim.
Everybody needs to learn how to swim, because it's you never know.
You never know. My dad can't swim. And the funny thing is that the Chinese whispers and the stories that came from the fact that we were in the tsunami, one of them was, the dad was out to sea. He was swimming in the sea and he caught her and dislocated her shoulder. We're like, he doesn't know how to swim, so he won't be swimming in the sea. So it's just Chinese whispers, isn't it? So my mum basically was screaming on the other side of the door. And in the end, obviously, the wave subsided and I got broken out of the bathroom with, they came with an axe and broke me out of the bathroom.
Do you mean the rescue or somebody?
Yeah, so it was the staff members who worked there. And actually there's a funny story, but that's a behind one of the staff members, but that's a whole different subject of angels. So basically I got out and realized that I was bleeding, and so the day went by and we were with another family whose son was my age, and he tried to save me because I couldn't get out, he couldn't get in, and we decided that it would be better if I sacrificed myself over him dying as well. So if I died, okay, but if we both died, I don't think, that would be very good. And so we were sort of bartering with each other's lives at this point. And he's like, no, I don't care, you need to get out, it's fine, my parents have another son, you're an only child, all of this barter system that goes on, this crazy instinct that happens to you. And I was like, no, you get out of here. And so later on in the day, the word tsunami was thrown around a couple of times. We realized what was going on, we lost a lot of possessions, but thankfully we didn't lose our lives. And I remember, talking about it in the evening, and the staff were fantastic there. They had lunch set at 12:15, and bear in mind the tsunami hit at 9:15. But we were sitting and we were hanging out, and I remember, fast forward to the next day, they put us in a different room, and we were sitting there, and my mum said, right, we're going back in the ocean. You were going back in the place that just killed me, like almost killed me. Nope, we're going back in the ocean. You're going back in. I was like, absolutely not. I'm not going back in that ocean. I'm never swimming in the sea again. And she looked at me and she went, if you don't go back in that ocean today, you're going to fear the sea for the rest of your life. And if you fear the sea for the rest of your life, you're not ever going to get a decent beach holiday, are you?
It's interesting that you're saying that, because I actually, in the summer, I helped a little girl, 8-year-old little girl, who was scared of, she called it the ocean, and she was scared of the fish in the ocean. And she went away on holiday, and she went away with another friend, and he's a family friend. And her little friend was swimming every day, and she was sitting watching. And the parents got hold of me, and we did online sessions. And after a few sessions, they actually sent me a film watching her, how she went in, and she enjoyed herself and had great fun. And it's just a beautiful video to watch, the joy in her face, and also the joy of her friend who was already in the water waiting for her to, all those days waiting and waiting. So, okay, when are you going to actually play with me? But she actually never experienced any trauma. Yeah. So it's just a belief that was created at some point somewhere. So she actually never had the trauma that you've had. So it's interesting that your mum thought that she assumed that because you've had that you may not even never want to actually go in. That's quite, it doesn't automatically go like that. It's not automatically because something happened that you may be scared of the ocean or water. You could have the fear usually go indirectly to something else. So you could have had, and I think later on you probably noticed that it did do something else. But did you go in the ocean? I did.
So, and you're 100% spot on. Obviously I did develop another phobia, another fear. And actually when we were talking earlier, I'd completely forgotten about this because I don't have it anymore. But we went back in the sea. And what I realized a few months later, a thunderstorm hit and I freaked out. And I realized the night before the tsunami, there was a thunderstorm. So now at that point, I associated thunderstorms with the tsunami. So thunderstorms go with trauma. So actually, I did completely forget about this until you mentioned it just now. For years, I had a fear of thunderstorms and I would hide in a bathtub because someone once said that you can't get affected in a bathtub. So I would hide in a bathtub with a blanket over my head. Or I would, you know, just make sure I'm under my blanket or under something. And I think about 2 years ago, I decided during a thunderstorm to go outside and just stand outside and just watch the thunderstorm. I don't know what came over me, what happened, but actually...
I'm ready to let it go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yes, usually when somebody has a fear, a phobia, you don't usually, it's not usually what you're actually scared of. It's the association of the memory that goes with a word. So for you, the first alert was a thunderstorm and equal tsunami. Yes. And your mum assumed that it was, you know, the water equals tsunami. But it doesn't go like that because the fear has no logic. No. And it's the subconscious mind you decide. And the subconscious mind doesn't have any logic. But the subconscious mind lives in the present time. So it doesn't matter if you keep growing and thinking, oh, it's happened a few years, it's not going to affect you. It will affect you because it lives in the present time. And that's part of what the problem is. So, so that's really interesting that I did assume that you wouldn't be scared of water. So it's interesting your mum was thinking of that. Yes. And she was trying to prevent something. And although you can't really prevent it because it's already happening.
Yes.
It's already happened in that sense. So.
Yeah, I think through her logic, you have to just face everything head on.
Well, they do say when you know, if you fall off a horse, you go back straight on and then you carry on. So they do say that. That's slightly different because that's, something happened there and then and then you go back on and it's just, you do the same thing. But if a tsunami happened, you're not going to do the same thing. So going into the ocean is a completely different scenario. If it's exactly the same scenario and you do it in a different way, then it's fine. But if it's a completely different story, then that's what's going to happen. So, and it's good that you actually noticed the link together. And this is once you understand the link, then you put some logic in it. And it's like putting the pieces of a puzzle together, and then the mind is ready to let it go. And that's what happened. So,
And it took about 14 years for me to do that and let go of the fear of thunderstorms. And that is why I didn't remember it, because it just didn't click, because I'd completely forgotten. It's been 2 years now since I've been able to tolerate and actually enjoy the look of a thunderstorm as well.
When you forget, when you actually deal with a fear and it's actually gone, completely forget that you had the fear in the first place. And this is one of the things that I always ask my client to fill a form first, so that, because I know that once it's cleared, they won't remember how bad it was. So, and that's like, you don't need it, because you don't need to store it in your memory, in your software, in that sense. So you just let it go and you forget about it and you just get on with your life. So that's what happened. So you did have a swim. You managed to do that. So you were the lucky one. There is no one that you knew that passed away or...
So one person on the island passed away, but again, my parents were protecting me and I didn't find out about this until years and years later. So we were in a part of the island where the water villas were just by us, and that's where the tsunami hit directly, and one man was in the water villas and unfortunately he passed away. But I don't know anyone directly that actually, I know a few people indirectly that passed away or were very affected by the tsunami, but I don't actually know anyone directly, thankfully, who passed away.
And your injuries were okay? Because you said you were bleeding and it was...
It was all superficial injuries. It was all, just cuts in the hands. And I've got, for years, the scars have sort of faded, but for years I had scars on my hands and feet to show for it. But the scars have faded over the years. And so, I think the psychological trauma of it was a little bit worse than the physical trauma. And
that's unfortunately what we don't see. We always have tendency of dealing with what we see. which is a physical trauma, but we forget that there is also psychological trauma that can occur, and usually it occurs 2 years after. It doesn't come up straight away. The cells need to take time to send the message in the brain, and there is I don't know when you if you're looking back, if you know, usually it's 2 years later things can start suddenly out of the blue. You may feel something, or you may, I don't know if you can recall something.
So obviously this was when I was 16, almost 17.
Yeah. So about 18, 19, yeah.
Yeah. So 19 is when my anxiety and depression started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's usually...
Pretty tense.
Yeah. So anybody out there who's listening, usually if any sign of fear, anxiety, or even illness, usually we look back into 2 years before that. What happened 2 years before in your life that hasn't been dealt with? And then in a holistic side, you will look into, and then we go into it. Sometimes we don't even need to go into it, but we just talk about it and we just clear the energy. But if the person is able to, then we go back into it, we desensitize it, we look at the emotion that's been trapped in the body, and we release them. Once they're released, then the body goes into helping the cells to heal, in that sense. But usually it takes two years for cells to reproduce. And so there is 2 years of messages going in and then creating an imbalance in the brain and a misconnection and misalignment. And that's usually what happened. And very often when I ask, mostly all my clients, every time I ask, okay, you know, if it's an illness or if it's depression or something, so okay, what happened before that? And 2 years before, what happened? And then I have not had one person not finding out and putting, and suddenly you see the light bulb in their eyes and it's like, wow, now I can put it together. And the minute you connect it together, part of the healing already happened. And this,
yeah, even for me today, the light bulb all times over.
Yeah,
it's incredible. I'm learning so much. Thank you so much. This is incredible.
So 19 years old, starting probably out of the blue, suddenly enough. Well, I don't know what you were doing when you were 19 or living, or what was going on in your life, and suddenly
you might have had a trigger at that point, because I was okay until I was sexually assaulted, and that's I think that may have been sort of the final straw or the trigger of everything, and that's when I went downhill and went into full depression for about a year.
So usually you have something happened to you, and then you 2 years later, usually things are showing up. But then if something else happened on top of that, then you're just crashing down. It's just, unless you have the tools to deal with it, your body is not going to take it. It's like a vase that's full of water and you just add an extra drop, it just goes over and you just can't. So you went into depression, and I'm sorry to hear that something else happened to you. How did you notice? Because sometimes people don't even realize they're in depression.
It took me a while. I remember being at university and not getting out of bed till 6 p.m. And then I'd had friends knocking at my door in the halls and saying, you need to come out, you need to be with us. And, you know, and I told a couple of them and confided in a couple of them. And I then got diagnosed with depression, but refused to take the antidepressants. And I was basically dropping in and out of depression through university. I left that university, went into another one, and actually that helped a lot. I went through the first couple of years of uni life loving it after that. So it was a case of friends noticing, people saying to me, you're not coming out with us anymore. It's a case of me constantly feeling like I had this massive elephant on my chest and I just didn't want to do anything, coupled with the anxiety as well.
Elephant that you're mentioning, that is what we call emotion trapped in the body. As you get more and more emotion trapped in the body, it gets heavier and heavier and heavier. It's like luggages. You just carry those luggages with you, but they're not just, there's no clothes in it. It's just emotions.
Yes.
And if you don't let them go, and if you don't deal with it, it will drag you down. And when it drags you down, it's less movement. So that part of the depression is moving less.
Yes.
And the less you move, the more depressed you feel, and the more down you feel.
Yeah.
it's really important. And even if you can't get out of bed, just to move your eyes, make sure eye movements are very good, and you know, just to push yourself to get out, and seeing colors, bright colors, really help uplifting the mind. So if anyone nowadays, you know somebody who's depressed, get some A4 bright color papers and just stick it on the wall, just to get them to bring colors into their mind. Because usually when you're feeling really down, you're more likely to see everything in black and gray, and so we need to force the mind to put color in the mind. So that's, you know, something that you can, that can be done. But how did you get out of the what did your parents noticed, and how did you get out of that depression?
So obviously it was on and off constantly because I wasn't dealing with it. So you sort of slightly come out of it and think that you're okay and then go back into it. And I must have been about 24 when I was feeling quite bad. And I came to my aunt and I said to her, you know, just talking to her, because her children suffer from anxiety and depression as well. And I was just talking to her about it all. And because my mum hadn't experienced anything like this before. And she said, oh, well, why don't you try crystal healing and Reiki healing? And I said, what is this? I said, rocks can't help. What are you talking about? This is ridiculous. And she goes, well, it helped cure my breast cancer, so I'm sure it can help you.
I can understand, because I am a Reiki master, and I send Reiki distant healing, and people very often said, well, you don't need to see me, you don't need to connect with me, and I can still, and you can still help me. I said, yeah, just stay in your bed, just relax, and I'll just send it. And really? You sure? And then they try once, and then it's like, wow, I slept so well. And then they just, and then, yeah, it's very different, you know, it's, if you try to explain the internet to the generation like three generation down, I mean, they will say, well, how can they work? How can we connect online with someone else with no wires? No, it's a bit like that. So you tried. So, okay. So what did you do? You tried, or you just saw, no, that's not for me. It's like bizarre.
I thought it was very strange, but her insistence was that it helped cure her cancer. And I thought, well, if it can cure cancer, it can cure depression and anxiety. And so I found a crystal Reiki healer in London and basically kept going to her. And I had all sorts of different things wrong with my body. Like I had just issues left, right and center. And so she gave me a range of crystals to help with all these different issues. And magically they were just disappearing. And I thought, oh, this is good. Okay. And I remember thinking to myself that it was a very weird series of events where I had my horoscope read, and they said that your healing will transform into your own your hands will become healing. So it was something along the lines of that, and this is a few years ago now, so I'm trying to remember back what it said, but it said something about my healing becoming a source for me healing others. And so that stuck into my head a little bit and said, okay, maybe that's what I'm meant to do. Maybe I'm meant to help people. But for now, I just want to, you know, make sure that my body's okay. So I did Reiki 1 in order to, you know, help heal my body. Then I got in touch with a crystal healer who taught, and I wanted to learn. And I was so fascinated by this subject that was helping transform my life completely, from getting rid of my migraines to getting rid of my IBS to getting rid of my the pain from my scoliosis. I have scoliosis in my spine, to helping with the pain from my endometriosis, to giving me, you know, obviously we're talking a lot about fear, to giving me that courage to get over my fears, to be the best that I can be. All these random rocks are helping me, and I'm going, what's going on here?
Just to tell our listeners, what does crystal healing involve? I mean, what did you have to do in order to, I mean, did she give you crystal? Did you have to hold crystals? Just for those people who don't have any idea what did that involve in the session for you to get that result?
So the different crystals are for different things. and she would place the appropriate crystal on a part of my body. And she worked intuitively, which is exactly what I do now, is I work intuitively and you place crystals on the chakras. And the chakras are basically, there's hundreds of thousands of chakras around our body, and they're little, I like to call them little, chakra means wheel in Sanskrit. And so chakras, like I imagine them as like a little clock cogs that go round and round and round. And when they stop working, that's when the physicality and the physical illnesses manifest. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like when you're placing a crystal there, the energy that comes from the crystal helps the chakra to spin again. And we have seven main chakras in our body, ranging from the root chakra all the way up to the crown chakra. So yeah. The root chakras at our pelvis. Then we've got, for the women, it's at the sacral chakras at the uterus. Then we've got the solar plexus chakra, which is just underneath our ribs. Then we've got the heart chakra, our heart, throat chakra, our throat, third eye, which is at our forehead, and the crown, which is just above our head. And placing these crystals in the appropriate places, and also holding crystals in your hands and placing them underneath you, having crystals on top of you, like hanging from the ceiling, that is the energy of the crystals creating I like to call it like an electromagnetic field, because our body and the crystals work together and like an electromagnetic field, healing those chakras, in turn healing the mental or physical or emotional ailments that we have. Basically, okay. That's crystal healing in a nutshell.
Yeah. So, I also do chakra work, but I just use my hands and ask, now it's online, so people just copy me. And it's actually exactly what you're saying. I just use my hands and anti-clockwise, literally just clearing like anti-clockwise, and then clockwise just to rebalancing it. But definitely with the crystal, it will be more amplified, and you will use the actual what that specific crystal has. You will use that for specific things. So you experienced it. Yes. And then you decided to learn it, or to...
I decided to learn it, yeah. And I met the most incredible mentor, who, his name is Philip Permut. He has several crystal healing books. He was the original, I like to call him the original crystal healer in the UK. And he has mentored me through my crystal and my Reiki journey. So my crystal Reiki journey, as well as mentoring me through so much more as well. And I knew the day I met him that he would be my mentor and that he would be guiding me through. So he's guided me through my whole journey. And he taught me so many things that I just wanted to know more constantly, that I would explore. And one of the best things he always says to me is, like, I always say, oh, Chris, Philip, what does this crystal do? He's like, try it for yourself. Tell me what it does.
And exactly,
that's a good mentor.
You need to use your intuition and the feel, and it's true. What did you study in uni? Was that completely different? Would that have been a completely different career?
Absolutely. I was media and sociology. So first I started off at Bristol University and I studied accounting with law. Okay. And then obviously everything happened and my depression occurred and I dropped out in the end. And then I studied media and sociology, and I ended up working for a big media company in Oxford Circus when I left university. And it just was not fulfilling for me. I then worked in corporate for a few years and then decided to give it all up and become a Montessori teacher. In between all of that, I decided to bake cakes professionally as well, which I did for a while, and I still do for family and friends. and then I became a Montessori teacher, and I think my journey as a Montessori teacher, I went back into depression while working for a boss that just wasn't very nice, and he was a bit of a bully. And that's when I realized, I was like, I need to turn to these crystals and I need to just learn exactly what to do with them and how to help myself and others.
So it's really important for people to find out that even if in the darkest time, we don't know the end story, but what happened is because of the sort of bad experience or hard experiences, that what makes you now what you are. And if you wouldn't have gone through that journey, you would have maybe become an accountant. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but you may not have been very happy in doing this the rest of your life.
My dad's an accountant, so I know I wouldn't have been happy doing it.
What I'm saying is really, in the darkest time, we don't realize why it's happening, but it is pushing us to look for something else that we would never have looked for if it wouldn't have happened.
100%.
So now tell us what you're doing and how did you find in a crystal that are really helping, and what type of things it can help.
Crystals can help with literally anything. There is a crystal for everything. And different crystals help different people in different ways. For example, the most common crystal that everybody knows about is an amethyst. Everyone loves an amethyst, whether you're into crystals or not. Everyone loves the purple of an amethyst. There you go. But honestly, it is nature's, I don't know, it's nature's all-rounder. And when an amethyst was created, I it blows my mind all the different things it can do. It can help. So I call it the natural equivalent of magnesium, because you've got magnesium that can help you sleep. So can an amethyst. You've got a type of magnesium that can help athletes. It can help with aches and pains. You can take a type of magnesium that helps with nervous system and headaches. And that's exactly what amethyst does. It helps keep you calm. It helps you with sleep. It helps with headaches, aches, pains. It helps you look within yourself, and helps with, if people are taking it on a different level, it helps with psychic abilities. It helps with your intuition, and it helps you get deeper into your meditation. So really, an amethyst is this massive all-rounder.
It's beautiful to look at.
It's stunning to look at. And I think,
yeah,
I think it's absolutely stunning to look at. Yeah. It's my favorite color.
I just have it just right here. Around my house, I've got quite a few places, different. I just find sometimes, even like I take a picture of a member of my family and just put crystals on it. I mean, this is like Reiki and crystal. Yeah. I also like having, I can't quite remember. Do you know the name of this one? It's black. It's usually for safety, protection. So that's also very nice. But there's loads of crystal, and I think for little children, it's really good. I mean, when I used to see face to face, I have lots of crystal in my clinic, and there's little crystal to hold for children, and they just pick which one. They're looking at the colors, and they just pick, and they always find that. Some of them, when they were holding, it's like, oh, it feels really warm, or it feels really cold. And, you know, and then just like, well, you know, holding it, where do you want to place it? Where would you want to place it? And then they automatically knew what to do with it, because children are so intuitive and they just know what to do with it. And just, or just going to school and holding and having one in their pocket can make such a big difference. It's just a simple thing, but it can build the confidence of a child, or if they're scared, just putting their hands in their pocket and holding a little crystal, knowing they feel safe. All those type of things that can make a big difference. So,
100% it can. I mean, I work with children who I dealt with trauma, bullying, things like that, and like exam stress as well. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, one of my clients, she'd been working with me for a couple of years, and she was really, really worried about her A-levels and doing her A-levels. And we worked together with Reiki, crystals, and all the other things I do, affirmations, mindset. And she had her crystals with her. And then she got an interview for Cambridge. And she was so nervous. She calls me the night before and she was like, okay, what do I do? So I was like, breathe, hold your crystals. She goes, how do I stop myself from fidgeting? I said, put your hand in your pocket and fidget with your crystals if you need to. And she calls me a few months later. And she goes, guess what? I got into Cambridge. I'm so happy and so excited. And then I got a phone call from her father to say, you know what, thank you so much for helping her, because we don't think she could have done it without her crystals. So it can help, ranging from that to to bullying, to, you know, helping with sleep, as I said. And also what we've been talking about is helping with fear. Crystals can help you overcome fear. Obviously, it's a tool in the toolkit with what you do. And that's why you work with crystals as well. You know, it's just one of the tools in an incredible set of tool, in an incredible toolkit that you can use to overcome
fear. It's beautiful to see. It's easy. You don't have to have a big crystal with you. You can just have a little one. You can have a few with you. It just, for kids, because of it's a mixture of... also color therapy, because the crystals have different colors, so you can pick according to the color that you want. You know, people can wear it in a necklace, people wear it in bracelets. You can put it in your pockets, because people don't have even to see it. There's so many different ways of feeling supported and grounded, and then, you know, getting on and helping, having that support to deal with things that happen. I think the best thing is, because you've experienced it and you've learned through it and you saw how it helped you, that what makes the difference. That's what makes it, you understand better when you see someone what's going on, what happened and how it can help. So you do a mixture of Reiki and crystal, or you just do crystal sessions? Or
so I do crystal Reiki healing. I do distance healing only. So I go forward and had a crystal consultation with my clients, and then I post them the crystals and I tell them where to place them, and then I send them the Reiki healing when they are nice and relaxed and sleeping, as you said. And it's the best thing. You're right. The clients wake up the next day and you get a message from them going, oh my goodness, I've had such an amazing sleep. So yeah, that's always really satisfying. I also work with angelic healing as well. And I work with affirmations, so my clients get loads of affirmations, and I work with meditation techniques as well.
Have you ever tried crystal healing for animals?
Yes, so I do a lot of crystal healing on my dog, and I do it on other dogs as well. So a few of my clients have got little beads for their pet collars to keep an amethyst on them. My dog sleeps with an amethyst next to her bed. She has selenite, rose quartz. What else does she have? She has citrine, because she's got, citrine's really good for money abundance, but it's also really good for digestive issues. And she's got really bad digestive issues. So I've got a big chunk of citrine by her bed. And so, yeah, she's calmed down a lot since the crystals. And whenever she sits on my lap, the Reiki starts. And so she gets a lot of crystal Reiki healing. I'll put crystals on her chakras as still as she can be for a little while. Is that orange calcite?
Yeah, I think that's the, yeah, that's the citrine, isn't it?
Is it orange calcite? What does it feel like? Is it a soapy texture?
No, not that soapy. I thought like it was citrine or I like the quartz also.
Quartz, yes.
I like all those crystals. I've got them around my computer and I've got a bit, you know, I like it to be around everywhere in the house, basically. Yeah. So
I'm going to say the best crystals for, I was meditating before we came on, and I was thinking about the best crystals for fear and overcoming fear. And you've got one of them, black tourmaline.
Yeah, the tourmaline.
The spells of the negative energy. Also, depending on the type of fear it is, tiger's eye gives you like the courage of a tiger.
That's very good.
Picture jasper as well is a really good one for helping sensory things and what you've talked about, like sensory.
And how do you put the, do you know, it's like sometimes when you go into a market, you see people selling, like according to the monster you're born, there is a stone connected to it. Is that connected, or is it just like a,
I wouldn't dispel it at all. And I feel like, yes, there's definitely stones that are connected with months. I mean, okay, I'm not wearing it today, but I do wear my aquamarine, which is my birthstone, because I love it and I think it's beautiful. And actually, I think for Pisces, you need aquamarine because you need to speak with wisdom and have that calm. So I think, yes, there is some association with that. However, I don't know anything about star signs or anything like that. So I go with my gut and think about what I feel the person needs rather than what month they're born in. As I said, I'm not dispelling that at all. It's probably got this whole another section.
Yeah, just for people to know that they don't have to stick to just one stone. Like if it's just a birthstone, you can also pick and take whatever stone you feel that you're attracted to. So Sonali, if anyone wants to work with you, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram at Enigma Healing. I am in the process of creating my website, so that should be done within the next few weeks. And that's www.enigma-healing.co.uk. But Instagram at Enigma Healing is definitely the best place to catch me because I absolutely love Instagram and I'm always on it. So that's the best place to catch me.
Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing your story and thank you very much for being with us today. This is Lauren Rosenberg, Fear Buster. And looking forward to talking about another fear next week. Have a good week. Bye.